I would also recommend reading our next guest books. Her name is Marie Vibert, and her and I met at the Comic-Con, or actually it was the Fan Expo. Marie, welcome to the show.
Hi. How am I doing?
Marie, okay. You're doing fine. Just relax and remember that we're sitting at a bar still having ginger ale together. We're relaxed and we're just going to have fun here. So you're a great author. Tell me a little bit about how you got started. What are some of the things that motivate you? And what are your interests outside of writing?
I started writing when I was very young. I grew up, you know, kind of poor. And I was into escapism. Reading science fiction was my escape.
Kind of like Ray Bradbury stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. C.J. Cherry, Ray Bradbury, Heinlein, Asimov, whatever I could get my dirty little hands on. You know, we had no heat, and I would be, like, under the blankets with a flashlight.
Where did you live?
We lived in Perry when I was in high school.
That's out east here.
Yeah, way out east. It was all farmland then. My dad is a construction worker.
The power plant's out there, isn't it?
That's why we lived out there. Yeah, my dad was a construction worker. We moved out there when they were building the power plant.
Interesting. So you're doing this for escaping the reality that you're in, and these are some of the, all these ideas are coming into your mind here, and it's all being filed away. And then you open the file drawer, and years later, and you're coming out with what you're doing right now.
My fourth book is coming out on July 14th, but here in Cleveland, we'll get a sneak preview. July 2nd at Loganberry Books, we're having a launch party. There's going to be pre-release copies.
Where's this located?
It's on Larchmere.
Yeah,
People that are from the west side don't know
Loganberry Books on Larchmere Avenue. It's just north of Shaker Square. It's an amazing bookstore. They have a cat.
Yes, and Otis.
And I will be giving out shot glasses to anybody who brings fan art.
Fan art?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I've had some people draw some of the characters.
Oh, I see. Okay.
On Twitter and stuff. And I was like, I love that.
And so characters from your book and your literature, you bring that and you'll get a shot glass.
Any fan art you want on anything I've written, I will give you a beautiful Galactic Hellcats shot glass with a logo that was designed by a Hugo Award-winning artist.
Wow. I'd like to see that. I mean, I may show up for this.
Yeah.
Not that I'm an artist, mind you, but I guess I am in some way or another.
Fan art doesn't have to be good. But yeah.
The effort has to be there.
I mean, yeah, it's all from the heart. When I was a kid, I used to daydream riding my bike around the block, daydream about it being a transforming space robot that was sassy and wanted to kill all humans.
A bit vociferous.
My imaginary friend was a killer robot from space. But I kind of tapped into that for the Galactic Hellcats.
What are the Galactic Hellcats? Explain that to somebody who's never heard of them and has no idea what we're talking about.
They are a female biker gang in outer space. Like, three girls from very different backgrounds.
They're all different.
Yeah. One's from Earth, one's from the moon, one's from the planet Ratana, and the three of them all have these solo flyers, these little personal spaceships that they got in different ways. I based how they got their solo flyers on how my dad's buddies got their motorcycles. So Margo was a soldier, and she blew her back pay on it when she got released from the service. And Key inherits hers, and Zuleika's just rich. So they're from very different backgrounds, and they're flung together by their shared passion for these spaceships, and then they get to rescue a prince.
They get to rescue a prince. Now, is this prince somebody who is he attractive or just rich?
Oh, he is both. But he's a gay prince. I didn't want the rescue to turn into a romance, because to me that, you know, when they rescue the princess and they immediately fall in love, that always felt a little sketch to me.
Yeah.
So he's not interested in the girls. Although one of the girls is really interested in him.
I see.
Tragedy for her. Don't worry. I mean, Thane gets a boyfriend eventually.
Well, thank God for that. Yeah. Well, it sounds like a compelling story. And how long did it take you to write this?
I wrote this draft of the... It was called The Stardust Gang when I was 16. And then a couple of years ago, around like 2016, I was feeling very bleak and I wanted to write something, you know, upbeat and fun. And like, I want to go back to what I enjoyed when I was a kid. So I wrote a new draft, and I think I probably spent about 5 years revising and, you know, fine-tuning the draft, and then it sold. It sold on a tweet. You can't do that anymore. Not just because, you know, Twitter is now
X.
A hellscape, I was going to say, but that I posted a message, and I was like, I have so many things I should be revising, but I keep going back to my space biker gang novel, and like 2 seconds later, private message, can you send me that?
So when you were at the Fan Expo, I mean, how much interest did you, you know, garner from that?
Oh, the Fan Expo was great. I was really pleased. It was my first time doing one of those, and I was actually holding down a table for my whole writing workshop, but I sold like $600 worth of books, of which about half were mine. Yeah.
Good.
And that paid for the table, and I'd definitely do it again. So, yes, independent authors, consider Cleveland Fan Expo. Free plug.
It's a nice place, and I've been, you know, Cindy and I attend there every year to try to get some interviews for the show. Mm-hmm. Marie, when you write a story, how do you like the... Every author likes to approach a project a little differently. In your topic, do you like to start with a quick background of the character, or do you like to jump into a plot and then go jump back to how they started?
I mean, it depends. So I write short fiction primarily. I've had over 90 short stories in professional magazines, including Amazing Stories, FNSF, Analog. So a lot of my stories are like what we call an idea story. So those start with an idea, like what would a future without free public education look like in the United States? No reason I'm thinking that. But sometimes stories begin with an emotional resonance that I want to reach. And with novels, generally speaking, I guess I start with plot. The Galactic Hellcats, I knew I wanted to write about this biker gang. I knew that the story had to be about how they got together, mm-hmm. how they became a gang.
So that was the, you know, the linchpin of how they became successful, because they, together, they're powerful.
Right. And they each have their own strengths and weaknesses. And, of course, ultimately I began with the characters, because back when I was a kid, that draft I wrote was because of a sketch my sister did. My sister's a wonderful artist, and she doodled these three tough chicks on like the back cover of our school notebook, and that became the Galactic Hellcats. The three characters were based on those drawings, and I guess that's why I'm so like, please do fan art of my characters. I realize I forgot to mention the name of the new book, which
yes,
is
please.
The sequel to Galactic Hellcats. It comes out in July. It's called Andre and the Hellcats.
Andre and the Hellcats.
Yes.
Named after Andre who?
Andre is a robot who is in the first book, and a rather minor character. This was my first time. I was asked by Vernacular Books to write a sequel. And so I asked all of my friends and everybody I knew, what do you want in a sequel? And they said, well, you had a sex robot that never got to have sex, was one of the things they first said. And I was like, okay, so we're going to have Andre, and he's going to have a good time.
Okay.
And then they're like, and we want somebody to get a boyfriend or a girlfriend, Marie. I don't write romance in general. It's something I'm not comfortable with. So this book was me sitting down to try to write romances. So I started with this idea of... Each of my main characters was going to have a personal arc that had something to do with love, either familial love, romantic love, friendship love. Mm-hmm. And that's how I built out my plot. And then Andre just kind of took over. I mean, he's sassy. He is everybody's sassiest pansexual friend.
Well, yes. Would you say he's truculent?
Oh, very truculent. But he's also very flexible. And
he does yoga then, right? Flexible. All right.
I mean, he's a robot. I can disconnect any of my joints you want.
Interesting, Bree. Interesting. So this sounds like a very interesting book. Now, what do you do when you get writer's block? How do you overcome that?
Oh, it's a curse. But everybody gets it. And for me, one of the things is to just sit down and let myself write as badly as I can.
And that the reason you do that is so you correct it?
Right. Well, writer's block is not the inability to write. One still has the same ability with language. Writer's block is the belief that everything you write is crap. So, I give myself permission to write crap because it's easier to edit the worst draft than to edit a blank page.
I see.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's basically the writer being hard on him or herself.
Oh, yeah. And nobody's as hard on themselves as the artist himself. I still am occasionally shocked, I tell you, when people actually buy my stuff. Honestly, like this novel, it's 2 months now before release, and I'm still thinking, but is it actually good? I don't know.
Well, you like to hear from your readers that, it's different points of the book that you really want them to catch on to.
Yeah.
And you never want to come off, I would imagine, as a great writer, as pedantic.
No, but no, that's interesting because I was just discussing this with my mentee. I'm in the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association, and I'm in their mentorship program. So I'm a mentor, and I was assigned a mentee, and we were talking about morality in fiction, and he said, well, doesn't that make it pedantic? And that's the challenge, especially, like I said, as somebody who writes a lot of idea fiction and fiction about my deeply held, beliefs about social justice and unionization and workers' rights, how do I convey my meaning without sounding like I'm preaching?
Right, or being too sanctimonious.
Or hitting the reader over the head with it. And one of the things that I've come to learn is that your plot actions speak louder than your characters.
Okay, interesting. Who do you think, in your vast knowledge of reading different authors, structures a paragraph and sentence the best of any writer you've ever read?
Oh my gosh, that's so good. That's such a good question. I loved Bel Canto by Anne. Wait, what was her last name? What was her name? Fuck, I don't remember. Pardon me. I don't remember her name. Okay, authors whose names I can remember. I mean, Ray Bradbury, of course, is beautiful. I really like Proust, Don't Judge Me.
How about Shakespeare?
Shakespeare doesn't really... I mean, I love writing in meter, but I don't think Shakespeare... I think you can't give him too much credit because so much of our own language is built off of Shakespeare, the ways, modern Spanish is built off Cervantes. Mm-hmm. We can't really appreciate him as a part of the milieu he wrote in.
And some people say, I'm not saying this, but I've heard people say that Shakespeare is a multitude of people.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. We don't know. They had very sketchy copyright back then.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have copyright back then.
But the only thing I really remember about Shakespeare is that Tom Hanks was in the Great Lakes Shakespeare Festival,
yes.
Which was, he lived on my street.
Oh,
yes,
cool.
So that's how I was able to get the interview with him. But I also know that, remember Shakespeare, the longest play was Hamlet, I believe.
Is it the longest?
I believe it is. I did some trivia. I'm a trivia host, so I got to remember these facts that are useless.
He pulls things up, I tell you.
But that is not a sign of intelligence. That's just a sign of remembering things. Intelligence is somebody that can really use that knowledge to benefit others. I don't think I do that, but an author can do that in many different ways. And that's something I would love to become, but I think sometimes authors are born and then they're harvested and they're created.
I disagree. I think every skill is a skill you can learn. I mean, I had to learn how to construct a plot. I had to learn how to finish what I start. And then I had to learn how to, you know, how to write about social issues without being pedantic. These were all things I had to learn. And that means they were things I originally did kind of bad.
And you have to somehow keep your own biases out of things if you want to get the, without being too overt with it.
Well, I think it's more, like, we're all biased in some ways, and we're going to be biased in ways that we don't recognize. And so for me, I think it's more important to own up to my biases.
Mm-hmm. That's what they say, write what you know.
Or write what you research.
What you feel. Yeah, that too.
One more question before we go to break. What are the right usage of certain words? I mean, like when you write a sentence, like there's certain words that you want to convey a powerful message. Are there certain words you like to use in there over other words?
I mean, that's such a general topic. I could talk about how you can use your syntax to shape the reader's reaction, to shape the reader's experience of what you're saying. And sometimes, like, when you want to say a simple truth, you want to use simple words. And sometimes when you want to be very extemporaneous, you know, and just, you, that's where you want to load up the beauty. And I love words.
A friend of mine who's a writer, she told me that don't use too many cliches.
Well, yeah, cliches, yeah, they're a dime a dozen, and they will always get you in trouble, much like using every writer has the words that they use too much, and I think they change over time. For me, for a long time, it was just. Everyone was just about to just did something just this second, and so... Honestly, when I finish writing a story, I go back with, and I do, you know, control F, just, and delete every instance of the word.
We're going to just take a break here. We'll be right back. Marie Vibert, our special guest. Marie, once again, let's share with the audience where you're going to be on July 2nd.
On July 2nd, I will be at Loganberry Books on Larchmere Boulevard in, I think that's technically Shaker Heights. It might be Cleveland proper.
Yeah, it might be right. Yeah, it's right on the right cusp on the of that, border. And it's right by the Cleveland Skating Club, I believe.
Down the street.
Yeah, that's where I play hockey sometimes.
Larchmere is such a lovely neighborhood. There's so many cute shops.
It is a nice place, yeah.
I love Larchmere. I used to go to the Dancing Sheep. It's so sad that it closed.
I remember the Dancing Sheep. It was this cute little gift.
You'll never go on the lamb at the Dancing Sheep.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
It was a great little boutique store. You could find one-of-a-kind things there.
Right next to Fine Points Yarns, which is still there, but they moved to a new shop.
So, Marie, what do you do for to recharge your battery as a writer? I mean, are you a runner? Do you bike? Do you read other books? What do you do?
Well, I read a lot, definitely, but I'm a cyclist. I'm a bike commuter, and I have a day job. I'm the webmaster for arts and sciences at Case Western Reserve University. So there's plenty of tracts of time when I'm not thinking about writing, or when that you were talking about writer's block. One of the best things for writer's block is chores. Like if my husband sees me mopping, he knows I'm in trouble.
You have a deadline, huh?
Nothing will inspire a person to do good things like custodial work. My gosh. Mopping and emptying trash.
No, anything that uses your hands but not your brain will get things moving again.
Right.
I agree with that. And let me leave you with this. Rod Serling, one of my favorite authors. He is just an amazing, as time goes on, you just realize the genius of Rod. What are some of the things that you take away from his life?
I mean, Rod Serling was definitely, I was a huge fangirl of Rod Serling as a kid. Always watched the Twilight Zone. I remember reading about how he talked about how what got him into science fiction and fantasy was that he kept writing these screenplays that were about politics, and he was trying to write a story about racism in the South, and they said, okay, but you can't mention race and you can't mention the South, to the point where he couldn't even have them drinking Coca-Cola because that felt too Southern to the censors. But then he said, if I put them on Mars, suddenly I was okay, and I didn't have to worry about what the sensors and the
yeah, exactly.
Sponsors would say.
Interesting.
Well, he was something else, and he wrote about 93 of the, like, 150 episodes of The Twilight Zone, and he went on to have loosely had control of Night Gallery, but he didn't like it because he didn't have enough control of it. And unfortunately, he died of a heart attack in 1975.
Oh, yeah. I was a baby.
Well, he did smoke 3 packs a day, and I think has something to do with it.
Yeah, his daughter,
Annie,
did she say to you that she wanted to have come home early and set the lawnmower on fire? Because I think he was mowing the lawn when he had the heart attack.
Yeah, that's a shame. Well, Marie, is there a place where people can get a hold of you?
I have a website, marievibbert.com, and you can also find me. Just Google me. I have a Wikipedia page. I can't believe I have a Wikipedia page.
Well, congratulations for that.
We're still trying to get him one.
Well, I'll get one.
Somebody has to make it for you, and thank you, stranger.
And you deserve it. Thank you.
Yes, you do.
Marie, we'll talk. Thanks for being here.
Okay. Lovely to be here.
All right.
Bye.